All right, hello listeners, and welcome back to Lead Up for Women, Speak Up to Lead Up. I'm your host, Colleen Biggs, and I am so excited because today is August 26th. What does that mean? That means that today is Women's Equality Day. I'm very excited about this, and if you're a woman and you don't know what this day means, I'm going to explain it to you. This is the day that gave us, back from 1920, in the 19th Amendment, it was the right for women to vote. And it passed in 1971. That's when we commemorate the 1920 certification of the 19th Amendment. So now you can mark it on your calendars that August 26th is Women's Equality Day. Not that we're equal, we are still trudging up that ladder, I can tell you that. But we are inching our way there, and we talk about this all the time on the show and in several of our opportunities that we have for women to speak up. And we talk all about it starts with us. If we want change, we need to look in the mirror and take that opportunity to speak up and use your voice and stand in your truth. And when you become more confident and you're willing to go for that next promotion and you're willing to start that business, that is how we are going to inch closer to the powerful women sisterhood of where we can become equal. So I'm really excited to have the guests that we have today with us. And we have Deborah Deal Blackwell and Dr. Bertie Simmons with us today. And we're going to get to interviewing them in just a few minutes. But before I get started, I wanted to remind all of our listeners that we have two new Teaching Tuesdays coming up on September 8th. We do it the second Tuesday and the fourth Tuesday of every month. September 8th, Wendy Yates is teaching us on time management. Stop wasting time and build your team. This is great for women entrepreneurs or if you are a leader in the corporate world. On September 22nd, Joan Michelson is a writer for Forbes magazine, and she's going to be talking to us about some subjects that are really close to her heart. And I'm going to be posting those on the website in the next week, www.leadupforwomen.com. You guys know the website. And if you are also looking for another opportunity to network and expand your circle of influence, I invite you to join us for our next Lunch and Learn. That one's coming up September 3rd, where I'm going to be teaching you how to master you to master your success. How do you show up for maximum massive results? We're going to be having time for networking. We have three awesome sponsors. We've got Jean Kuhn, we have Cheryl Plouffe, and we also have Cloversea that has sponsored our events and are going to be there. So we welcome you to join us. It is only $20. It is a 90-minute, very heavy, intensive education and networking with other women. So we definitely invite you to join that. And there are going to be some additional opportunities coming out for you through our community this week. And I want to invite you to join our Facebook group, as well as taking action and stepping up and joining the Lead Up for Women community. All right, ladies, let's go ahead and get into, I'm excited to be able to speak with Deborah Deal Blackwell today. She's the VP of, is that Nine Power Clean Water? I'm not really sure exactly how to say that. Do you want to help me out with that, Deborah? You're on mute, so you're going to have to, there you go.
You said it right, Colleen.
Oh, okay, great.
You said it right.
All right, so it's an innovative provider of clean tech solutions designed to recycle industrial wastewater so that fresh water resources can be preserved for families, crops, and communities throughout the U.S. I love this. I'm all about sustainability. I'm all about opportunities for us to tap into the resources we already have, recycle, and reuse them. And Deborah was recognized by the Denver Business Journal as one of the top women in energy in Colorado. She's also the chair of Jeffco International Women's Day and understands the importance of preserving fresh water for women. Deborah's dedicated conservationist, it's a bad one for me today, who also helps to oversee.
Conservationist.
Thank conservationist. You. Here's what I know. She's driving initiatives for women and disadvantaged communities in the U.S. around the world. That's what I know. And those are the important pieces. She's changing the landscape of what it looks like today in the blueprint so we can have a better tomorrow. So Deborah, thank you so much for joining us today on our podcast. We're very happy to have you.
Thank you, Colleen. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, Deborah. So tell me, you know, normally I would ask the question, what makes you so awesome? You know, what is it about your work? But I'm going to start with the first question, just so we can dive in a little bit and get to know you a little bit better. I would love to know a little bit about of your story. What brought you to be so passionate about water? You know, what is your background? Why water? Why choose this initiative? Where did that passion come from?
Well, coming up, I lived all over the world, basically, and in several different countries, and visited around the globe, and did some work around the globe, and it always struck me the contrast between the way people live in the United States, most people live in the United States, and the way people live in developing countries. And the key to improving the lives of many people in these developing countries, in these countries that are struggling so much, is just one very basic thing, and that's access to clean water. 1.8 billion people around the world do not have access to proper sanitation, clean water that's consumable, just the basic resource that we have to have as human beings. And we're so lucky here in the United States. You know, the average American uses between 80 and 100 gallons of water a day. Do you know what the average person in a developing country uses? Maybe a gallon, because they just don't have the resources to clean water. The water they have access to is contaminated with chemicals, biogens, all kinds of heavy metals, all kinds of contaminants that will 1,000 children die every day, according to the UN and the World Health Organization. 6,000 children, little bodies, get put into the ground every day around the globe because they didn't have access to clean water and decent sanitation. So they're getting diseases that will kill them off, and they're not able to survive. So if you're not getting access to clean water, if you have to hike 4 hours every day to go get water that's really not even clean, when do you have time to go to school or go to work? And if you're drinking contaminated water, you're probably experiencing some sort of sickness or disease that's keeping you from going to school and going to work. So water is really, to me and to my company, the most important basic necessity that we have to focus on now. And especially on Women's Equality Day. You know, I think about how lucky we are here in the U.S. as we sit in our air-conditioned offices, looking at our computers and wondering, you know, where are we going to get our lunch from today? There's millions of women out there who are wondering where they're going to find clean water to drink.
That's so true. I have been working with women in Kenya, in Africa, and you know, their value is honestly, to be blunt, less than a goat. And you know, they're frankly selling their bodies, you know, for a couple dollars a day to be able to feed and get water for their children. And you're right, I love the way you put it, Deborah. You know, we sit in these palatial offices or homes.
Yeah.
you know, and there's so many women out there and families that can't get access to clean water. I know that in addition to my church charity, there was one charity in the last 2 years that I donated to religiously every single month, and it was for water, for a mission to get clean water to every country across the world. And it is definitely one of those, I really believe this is an initiative and a movement that every single person listening should consider in taking part in. You can do your part, and it can be a very small part or it can be a very large part in helping the communities that and the companies that are out there working to provide clean water for other, you know, for these areas. So just so that you talked about contempt. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, water, just having water ties into some other issues that are important to women. And I'm glad we're talking about this on Women's Equality Day. It ties into literacy, the human trafficking and sex slavery that still goes on out here. That goes on in the United States, the domestic violence. It's all tied in there together. It really is. And for the reasons that I mentioned before, if you don't have water, you don't have, you can't get to school, you can't get to work. So that's the big tie in there.
So let me ask you about, you know, I was watching a documentary several months ago, and it was about, I could have swore it was in Italy. I don't remember exactly which country it was in, but they were providing fresh water at different pumps throughout the country. And if you were homeless or if you were not homeless, every single person had access to these fresh water pumps, and they were all over the entire country. To me, I look at that and I'm like, oh, we need that in America. You know, in my community alone, we just did a hydration drive for the homeless where we had donated over 40,000 cases of bottled water. Getting access to clean water, it seems like it should be such a very simple task, Deborah, and yet it's not. It's not.
No, it's not. And people pulling what they think is fresh, clean water out of the ground, if that water has not been tested, they may still be doing themselves harm. Mm-hmm. Arsenic, radium, lead, all these can be found in well water throughout the globe. And if the water they're pulling from these wells and these freshwater sources has not been tested, they could, you know, just because it's clear doesn't mean it's clean water. And there's a lot of contaminants hiding. And with Nine Power Clean Water, with the foundation arm of our company, in fact, we are working on designing a smaller unit than what we normally use for industrial purposes, so that communities and households can hike it up the hill into the bush, wherever it is that they live, and run their water through it and be assured that they have clean water that's not going to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our big program that we're working on now with the foundation. So
that's great. Because where we think there may be fresh water, just as you're saying, it's actually contaminated. So give me an inside look of how your foundation is able to, you know, what are you guys working on now? What are the major initiatives that you're working on? And then let's talk about how the women and the general community that I work with can get involved. What can we do? What are the steps that we can take and to be able to assist you in providing fresh and clean water?
Well, right now, we're still working on the technology for this small household and community side sized unit. Okay. So there's not a whole lot to do right now at some point for us directly. But at some point, we will be having a GoFundMe campaign to help us distribute that technology, this new solution, out to the hinterlands, to areas that need it. In the meantime, I would suggest and hope that everybody would support a water nonprofit such as Charity Water, or one of the many that are on the internet now that are serving the same audience that we're trying to help. So that's what we're trying to do with the water. With Jeffco International Women's Day, that's something that we started 5 years ago, and it brings together women from throughout the community for workshops and keynote speakers and an opportunity for them to be educated on some of the issues of the day, such as human trafficking, domestic violence, literacy, and the water situation. Yeah. So we started that, and that's an annual event. And that's our springboard for relationships throughout the community. We don't charge very much to go to the day. It's just basically what it cost us to put on the event. So we try to make it as accessible and affordable for every woman in the community as possible.
And when is that, what day is the event that you have, able the event? Is it annually?
Well, International Women's Day it's annually. International Women's Day is officially on March 8th. And if you go to the UN website, or just look up International Women's Day, that's the global day. We know exist.
You broke up a little bit there, but
so
yes.
Past year.
So you actually hold it on, women's.
No, we don't. We hold it on the Friday that's closest to March 8th, because sometimes March 8th, will land on a Sunday or Saturday or something. We always shoot for the Friday closest to March 8th.
Okay, wonderful. And then we'll have that information in the description for the podcast for anybody listening through their podcast. And then if you're watching on Facebook Live, we will also, at the end of this show, Deborah will go in and drop the information for the link on how you can get involved in that and have that information available for you. So thank you about that, Deborah. So tell me a little bit about your background, Deborah. What did you do before you got into working with International Women's Day with Jeffco, and before you're passionate about getting clean water for women? What did you do before that?
Well, I started out in radio television and worked for the NBC affiliate in Florida, and went into marketing, and then went into the nonprofit realm, was the CEO of a 5-state nonprofit, Angel Flight Southeast. And from there, my brother called me and said, "Hey, you want to help me with some tech transfer?" And that's where we began utilizing the patents and the technology that the U.S. government was making of businesses to commercialize and bring to market. And we had 9 companies now, 9 startups. This is the 9th. We did a small modular nuclear power reactor, and I spent a good deal of time in Washington on Capitol Hill lobbying to get legislation passed that would help us bring that to market. We've spent time on software. We grew a software company. So we kind of, for the last 20 years, that's what we've done, is worked on startups and bringing the technology that is created in the United States National Laboratory System out to market and commercializing it and making it available, because the national labs are wonderful think tanks, but they're not very good at bringing a product or a technology out to the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your hard work in now driving clean water for communities, for women, for families, both domestically and global. Thank you so much for the hard work that you're driving for those initiatives. We definitely appreciate you, and we appreciate the time that you put into it. Do you want to share with us how someone can get involved with the talk?
I'm sorry, you broke up.
Okay. Can you tell me how women can get involved? You said they can get involved to go to the UN for the event for the International Women's Day. Do you have a website for that?
We actually have a Facebook page for the local for Colorado.
Okay.
And it's called JEFCO International Women's Day. If you want to start your own International Women's Day event, you should just Google that. And there is a website which will help you get started with your own event in your area.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Deborah, for joining us today. That's very exciting.
Hello?
And can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me? I'm not really sure what's happening. So it seems as if there may be, sorry about that, ladies. I'm not really sure what happened. Are you guys okay and everybody's still there?
We're still here. It's just looks like Zoom.
We will have to do a huge fix on that one. I'm not really sure what happened. That's the first time in 2 years that's ever happened. So I do apologize. I'm not really sure what happened there, but I'm glad. And we're just going to keep on going. We're going to keep on trucking. So thank you, Deborah, again so much. Birdie, I am very excited to be meeting you. And so you went into retirement, you came out of retirement, you are an author of the book, Whispers of Hope, The Story of My Life. Did you write that in retirement or before retirement or when you came out of retirement?
When I came out of retirement, I was 84 years old. I mean, when I retired, that's when I wrote the book. Mm-hmm. So it's only been out less than a year now. And I'm 86 now. But I would like to talk a little bit about Deborah as I'm talking about the work that I've done.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I spent 58 years in education, and I had retired, and I'd been retired 5 years, and they asked me to go to a school that the parents and students called a throwaway school, and it was known for violence and gang activity, and it was a direct pipeline from high school to prison. And so I said no twice, because I was working with Barbara Bush on the literacy program then. But I just lost a granddaughter in a skiing accident. She was 16 years old. And she always said she was going to grow up to make the world a better place for all people. So I thought the third time they called me, maybe I could go to the school and make a difference, even though I knew nothing about gangs or what to do about violence and so forth. So I went there and I promised them 3 months, and I stayed 17 years. So when I retired, when I left, I was the oldest principal in America at that time. And I had been a superintendent, I'd been other things. But the thing that meant the most to me was what happened at FIRM. And I'd like to say that one of the things that Deborah might be interested in is that area of town was the most polluted area in the state of Texas. and the highest rates of cancer there because of the air and the water. And so one thing that I did was have an environmental group of students, and what they discovered about the San Jacinto River that some of our kids live near, a lot of people there were getting cancer. And so they went out to do a study, because the people on the San Jacinto River were eating fish from the river. They were swimming in the river. And what they did was film that area, and we began to write about what we found. And we sent a letter to the EPA about the contaminated water in the San Jacinto River, because there had been two big paper mills there, and they had left all of their dangerous chemicals in big barrels there. But because Texas has so many hurricanes, they had broken loose over the time and spilled out into the San Jacinto River. And so my kids went out and they made a film called Jackie's River, which won the state environmental film award. Mm-hmm. And so we wrote to the EPA and the EPA came down and said, there's nothing wrong with water in the San Jacinto River. So I said, this is not Flint, Michigan. We don't just sit back and let you tell us that. And so it really happened that eventually they found out that that was why so many people, even the animals, were dying out there, and it was contaminated. And in addition to that, we tested water all over the east end of Houston. And if you don't know Houston, you don't know that all of the industry there along the ship channel, and they were spewing out everything into the water and into the air. So we even did samples of the water in our school as a result of the studies we had done with the university on the San Jacinto River. And what they found was the copper content in our drinking water in that school was so high that it was causing various kinds of diseases. So they went and talked to city council about what was happening on the east side of Houston, and they talked to our school board about how dangerous it was even to drink the water in that school. Well, we now have a new school over there. But in addition to that, every summer I sent kids to Cambodia because they had no fresh water in some of the schools. And that's why I wanted to tie what Deborah was saying, because our kids went there and helped to bring fresh water to elementary schools in Cambodia. And it was one of the best experiences we ever had. We worked with the East-West organization, and they supported us in getting kids to Cambodia and having them work there. And my kids, that side of town is very poor. And our kids were at that time sixth from the bottom nationally in income, education, and health issues. And so when they got back from Cambodia, every year I had debriefing meetings with them. And my kids said, Miss, we thought we were really poor here until we went to Cambodia and saw how poor those kids were. And they were so thrilled that they got to bring some fresh water to some of the schools there. But we tested the water and everything on the east side. And one of the things that they are working on now is the ship channel and how polluted the water is there. So I worked with that, but I went over to that school not knowing exactly what to do about gangs and all that kind of stuff. And I fell in love with the people. And so having told them I'd give them 3 months, I stayed there 17 years, and it was amazing what we were able to accomplish there. And a lot of it had to do with environmental issues.
Yeah, you were very instrumental in creating that transformation from what I am listening to you say, and from, you know, where the school started and yes. how the school ended up in 17 years from the time when you left. So talk to us a little bit about the awards that you were able to help the school earn for these children and what that meant to you throughout those years?
Well, one of the things was that kids, when I went there, it was about, the graduation rate was about 50%. And the state had leveled that, named that school a dropout factory. And so I was really, because these are all minority kids, and I don't have to tell you I'm white, and I didn't think they would want me out there to begin with. And yet I developed rapport with all of them. And so we were able to work to improve the graduation rate. When I left there, we were about 94%, and we'd gone from around 50. And that was because of the of a covenant we had, because we developed it with the community, that, or we were all going to work together to make that whole side of town better because of what we were doing in that school. And so I started giving them different courses that nobody thought they could pass. But as a result of one of those, well, I'm going to tell you first, that the gangsters came to me, because one day I came up to the school and they were having a riot, which was awful. We couldn't have after school activities or assemblies when I went there, because we had 17 identified gangs on that campus and they would all fight in there. So one day I came up and I was shocked because there was a riot going on at the school. And they were hauling, ambulances were hauling police people and kids and teachers away because they'd been injured in this riot. So when I went in that school, I was clueless as to what I should do about these gangs. And so I've always kind of thought out of the box. So I said, I'm going to bring these gangsters together. My assistant principals were sending 32 gang members off campus to alternative schools just to get them off campus. And I don't know if you guys know this, but in education, we keep doing the same things over and over, whether they're working or not, and it's because we've always done them. So I said, I'm not going to do that. And they said, what? You'll be breaking the rules. And I said, well, they broke a rule when they asked this old woman, I was 67, when they called me to go over there. And I said, so I have to do what I think is right. And so then they said, you can't bring warring gangs together in one room. So I did. And I brought 32 gangsters in a conference room. And so I started trying to find out what I could do to bring peace into their lives and into the school. And at first, all they were doing was mean mugging each other. And I was scared because I didn't know how to mean mug back. But I kept talking with them. And finally, I found out something that startled me. This was right after 9/11. And they didn't think 9/11 had actually happened. They said it was movies and that the country wanted to invade Iraq. And they were making these movies to try to fool people. And they thought, particularly with those people, they said they were poor and minorities, and everybody thought they were stupid. So I thought, well, I know 9/11 did happen. I promise you it did. And they said, Miss, if you believe that, you're dumber than we are. So anyway, I said, I couldn't think of anything but I've always sort of had hope. I'm a hope whisperer. So what I did was say, what if I took all of you to see Ground Zero, and I took you to New York? And there was dead silence with them. And finally, one kid said, Miss, will you drive us? And I said, no, I won't drive you. You guys, I'm an old woman, and you guys are a bunch of thugs. And I can't drive a bunch of thugs to New York. And for some reason, they all started laughing. They relaxed. I don't know why. First of all, I don't know why I thought to call them thugs, but they loved it. And so finally, they all decided, I said, you'll have to go on a plane. Well, they were scared to death to fly. And it's really interesting to see gangsters with tattoos everywhere and have always been fighting. afraid, and they admitted to me they were afraid to fly. So I made arrangements to take them out to the airport and take them through a plane so they could see inside it. And when we were in those planes, in the plane, the kid said, "Miss, will you sit by me?" And I said, "Baby, if one thug goes down, all thugs go down. By sitting by you won't help." So anyway, you know what I did, which was dumb. I went to HISD, to the district, and I said, "I'm trying to take 32 gangsters to New York. Would you help me find money to cause that to happen?" And they said, "What? No, we won't do that. People are going to think you're crazy." I would keep that very quiet. And so the next thing I thought, I'll go back to my community and have fundraiser. But you can't run, you can't raise funds in an area of town that has no money. Mm-hmm. And so I thought maybe I should just let them have a little fight. So in order not to lose face, but I had been working with some consultants, and one of them was Dr. Benna Kalik, and another one was Dr. Art Costa, and the other one was Marion Leibowitz. Well, it just so happened Marion Leibowitz was the mother of Jon Stewart on Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. Well, they all heard that I was trying to take 32 gangsters, and I started getting money from everywhere. And I got money from as far away as Hawaii. And then my teachers thought I was crazy too. And so first of all, couldn't get them to go with me to chaperone. Only one would set you, he would go. And so they said they were gonna stay at home and watch the fights in New York City on television. And so anyway, I got all that money. And they told me I was rewarding the wrong behavior, that I should be rewarding the smart kids. And they said, example, we have a National Honor Society. So I said, well, I have enough money to take them with my gangsters. So there were only 9 members in the National Honor Society. So I had to ask a friend, my family, and everybody to chaperone. I took those kids to New York. They signed a contract. They would stop the gang fighting. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have gang fights anymore. And that was the year right after 9/11. And I stayed there until 2 years ago. And so we went to New York and we didn't have any problems at all. Mm-hmm. And it was really funny because, you know, that little chapel there, Ground Zero, I went in the back of it and I noticed they were all praying in front. And one kid came over to me and said, "Miss, I bet you didn't think we prayed, did you?" And I said, "Oh, yes, I'm sure you are praying for the people who lost family and friends at here." And he said, "No, miss, we're praying that that plane will not crash when we start back to Houston." So, but that just made so much difference because I had made friends with the gangsters. And they started protecting me. And so we won. I started giving them more difficult advanced grant subjects. So we won the Inspiration Award for, this hurricane's about to blow in here.
But anyway. You need to get a drink of water.
Well, I'm going to drink a little tea here. Okay. But anyway. What happened was that we were taken to New York to receive the award. We were one of 3 in the nation that got this award. So we won several awards, but one of my favorite was the Inspiration Award because that showed that we were providing subjects to these kids that nobody thought they could ever pass. And after that, I guess my story ended because I went too crazy and I thought that I would go for Lauren Powell Jobs. She was going to give $10 million mm-hmm. to schools to rethink high schools so that you begin to work more with the students. Mm-hmm. And so we applied for that. And none of us, we had to work like 2 years on that. And none of us thought this little throwaway school was going to get that money. And so one day we got a call to come to a meeting. And we went down there and had a television on there. And we were all sitting, my little team was sitting there. And I looked up there and there was Orrin Paljog telling us that we won a $10 million grant. Over 700 schools had applied for that grant and they'd chosen, how many? 10 of them. And so I thought, oh my God, I can't believe this. So we got to go back up there and we were given the $10 million grant.
That's amazing.
That caused me trouble.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, Bertie, I really believe it's because of your hope and your vision. You were the first one in these individual lives that you gave them hope and a vision that they could be more than they ever thought they could, that there was something out there greater than themselves, that there was something other than just being in a gang or being stuck in where they were. You know, you gave them that hope and that vision for them to believe in more. Did you ever see the movie Dangerous Minds with Michelle Pfeiffer?
No.
Okay, you need to watch that movie because it came out in like the 90s. It came out in the 90s. It is exactly this story.
Oh, okay.
He came to I'm not kidding. She came to a high school and was a teacher in this high school, and there were gangs and kids killing each other. There were kids not showing up in her class the next day because one had killed the other. Uh-huh. Same type of story. She wasn't the principal. She was one of the teachers, but she taught them how to believe in themselves and how to have hope and vision for something more. And it was just step by step. And like you showed them, you know, 9/11 and them thinking it was fake, but showing them it was real and taking them somewhere and believing in them and then asking them, if I do this for you, I'm going to hold you accountable to do this for me.
Exactly. So
it was and, a beautiful story.
No, I'll see that. I've never seen that.
You'll love it.
I will tell you that I had about 1,400 students and I knew each one of them personally and I knew their parents. And if they didn't come to school, I went out to get them, even though it was dangerous in those neighborhoods and nobody ever hurt me. And so I think it was relationships that we built. I know it was giving them hope because they were hopeless. And it was amazing that the gangsters started walking me out to my car because I got there at 6:30 in the morning and I'd leave about 6:30. And they'd walk out to my car, and one night we went out, and the kid said, Miss, teachers are trying to get us to key your car. And I said, oh, don't worry about that. They can't key my car. I keep my keys in my purse. And they couldn't believe I didn't know what keying a car meant. They said, Miss, if you're going to be on this side of town, you need to learn the lingo. And they wanted to run keys down. I had a BMW. And I thought I was real sexy at my age. But anyway, they wouldn't run keys down my car to scratch it. Mm. I couldn't believe it. But I began to hire teachers. I always thought on our campus, the kids had no dreams when I went there. Mm-hmm. And the teachers had been there for a long time didn't like the kids. They said they didn't want to learn. And that the parents didn't care whether they learned or not. I didn't believe that. And I found out that wasn't true. And so I found that the kids did want to go learn and that their parents did. And so we began to work with them in a way that the kids were going to learn. And I said, I've always been a hope whisperer. I went through some hard times in my life, which are in the book. And so that helped me to better understand the needs of these students and their parents. And we just, it was like a big family. And I think the district wondered if I was ever going to just get on out of there because I was 84.
Yeah.
So they took care of that.
Well, thank you so much, Bertie, for being a whisper of hope for all of these children. You have changed the trajectory of all of their lives, which then I'm sure changed the lives of their families. And some of them are probably alive today because of you. I mean, that
thank
is
you.
An amazing feat. And so can you tell everyone, I loved your story. And I know so many listeners are going to want to go grab your book to learn a little bit more about your life. So where can we find the Whispers of Hope, the story of my life?
You can get it at Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
But I wish, because I'm trying to spread the word, that there's always hope. Even from my own life, there's always hope. Don't give up.
Yeah.
And that's what those kids learned.
Yeah.
And by the way, they all still call me, and the grandparents and the parents call me.
That's awesome.
And I just love them. Thank you for having me on your show.
You've made an impact in their entire life and their extended family's lives. That's amazing. And I'm so happy to hear these stories and to have the opportunity to have you as a guest today, Bertie. So thank you so much. And I hope all of you go out and purchase her book, and we'll make sure we put the link in there as well. And today we heard a lot about hope and vision. So never give up. We have a lot of hope and vision around us, and always keep hope and always provide a vision for those around you. And like we say, lead up and leave the ladder down, and be sure you're lifting others and helping them along the way. I want to talk about our guest that we have next week on September 2nd. We've got Joan Michelson. Just like I said, she's a speaker, coach, and a journalist for Forbes magazine. She's going to be joining us next week as our special guest, as well as Ashley Schmitz. Ashley is the CEO of Each Penny Bookkeeping. She's a financial strategist. So she's going to talk to us a lot about financial strategies. So before we leave, I just want to leave the message for all of you to remember that you are the only you that has ever been. You are the only you that will ever be. So how you pioneer your future is up to you. Do not wait for someone else to give you the permission to lead your life. Look at what Bernie did. Look at what Deborah's doing. They are leading change. They led change. Do not be afraid to take that step forward. Show up, be seen in the spotlight, and make change. Be you and be strong. So dare to be different. You are not meant to fit in. All right, ladies, thanks for joining us this week. I am super excited about next week's show. Again, I want to just say happy Women's Equality Day to all of the women out there. See you next week. Bye-bye.